Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
This is Sam Edwards, proud sponsor of Heritage Radio Network, SurreyFarms.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah, that cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh, man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
That cat is high. Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. On the phone today, we have someone I just met very recently, actually. Last month, I was down at a friend of the show, St. John Frizzell's Bar, Fort Defiance in Red Hook, New York. Well, not Red Hook, New York. Red Hook, Brooklyn, that is. And there was the night of the Charles H. Baker Shaker, which was given to him by Charles H. Baker's daughter. And he decided to invite a lot of his friends out to have this great night of cocktail making and shaking in this artifact of cocktail history. And at the end of the night, we retired it and put it in a glass case, and it's on display there at Fort Defiance. That night, I got to run into a very nice couple that just opened up a distillery in Red Hook very recently called the Van Brunt Stillhouse. And on the phone today, we have proprietor and master distiller, Derek Schlesselman. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. Thanks for calling it in. I know you're a very busy man, and I'm just glad to get you on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Awesome. So give us a little bit of background, just a little bit of introduction of like how this distillery got started. I know right now you're just you're doing the rum as far as what's being distributed, but you have a lot of projects underway.
Yeah, right now we just have rum in the stores right now, but at this very moment we're also sort of playing around with our whiskey recipes because we want to release some whiskey next year, and we just wanted to get some whiskey in the barrels while we're selling our rum. But mostly we're focusing on the rum. And this fall, once wine making season rolls around, we also will spend a little bit of time making some grappa.
Oh man, that's something I've always wanted to do around here. There's so many wineries around, it just makes sense to do that.
Well, that's actually how it all sort of started, was with a conversation with Red Hook Winery down here in Red Hook. I had actually never made grappa before, and it just seemed like a fun little side thing to do, and I got hooked. I get so excited about the season rolling around.
Absolutely. And so, did you start out with like a home still, something like stovetop or something smaller? You know, like, I mean, obviously you didn't go straight for the Christian Carl, did you?
No. Once I sort of had the inspiration to try my hand at distilling, I bought a what was labeled a garden ornament from Portugal that got imported, and it's this beautiful, you know, distillation came to Europe through this Portugal and Spain peninsula, and this still is designed and came from a time of another era. It's this beautifully handcrafted, copper-hammered alembic still. And, I started my first experimentation with it. And then eventually when I started to get serious about the possibility of having this be a business, I contracted some distilling with a distillery up in Connecticut, Westford Hill Distillery, who mostly does brandies, but I convinced them to let me play on their still and sort of refine my rum recipe so that when Van Brunt Stillhouse opened, we'd have a nice, solid recipe ready to roll.
Cool. And did you, I mean, obviously you probably played around with different like sugar canes and then unprocessed sugars and processed sugars. I mean, what was the process?
Well, no pun intended there. Back then I would ferment all the washes in my basement. I had these 50-gallon drums, and would go down in my basement and mix up different sugar combinations and use different yeasts. And then once they were fermented, I would, you know, laboriously pump them out of my basement into the back of my old pickup truck, and then cart them off to this distillery up in Connecticut to make them into rum. And it was a blast. It was a very fun experimental time for me. And I tried demerara sugar, and I tried molasses, and I tried. I didn't actually try any white sugar, but I tried just about every other sugar I could get my hands on. And in the end, I settled on this totally unprocessed, naturally dried sugar that comes from India. I mean, you can get this type of sugar from anywhere in the world, but the company that I wanted to run with was importing it from India. And I'm very excited about it. I'm very happy with it.
Cool. And what are some of the characteristics you would use to describe that specific sugar as opposed to, like you said, like a demerara or, say, a turbinado?
Right. Well, something I discovered in researching sugar is that demerara and turbinado are relatively refined and then are typically sprayed with molasses.
Sure.
to give it that richer molasses flavor. And while
like
I was actually created some good
thing.
Rum with that sugar, what I like about the sugar I chose was that it's never had any of the molasses removed from it. It has this rich, deep flavor. I mean, I've tried to make some simple syrups just to make with cocktails with it, and I actually didn't like it in cocktails because it's such a rich flavor that it really ends up tasting like you're putting molasses in your daiquiri,
wow.
Which is not really what you're looking for.
Right. So, throughout this process, you found the sugar you liked. You started originally taking it to this distillery in Connecticut. When did you start bringing it back to Brooklyn?
The laws are all very specific about this, and while you're allowed to produce wine in your basement in the quantities that I was producing it, you're not allowed to be distilling it or have distilled spirits that are homemade. And so basically all the rum got produced under their license, and it stayed in their distillery while I was getting my lease together and my license together. So it all came down to Brooklyn as soon as I got my license back in December.
Cool. So I just have to ask, because it's always been a dream of mine. The Christian Carl still. I mean, it's basically like with so many like newer distilleries popping up, it's cool to see that there's a company like Christian Carl that's producing these beautiful, beautiful copper stills, and you're starting to see them, especially, I mean, around town. It doesn't feel like it's because that's someone that's producing them at a quantity to where everyone can have one. It seems like that's the quality that everyone wants, and for any new distiller, you really have to go out there and like have the best equipment and do everything the right way. And it's cool to see, especially with a lot of the contemporary distillers, even just in New York City, it seems like most of them have the Christian Carl label on them.
I definitely I come from a long line of farmers, and farmers are always well known for sort of making do with what they can. And around my distillery, you'll find plenty of things that are cobbled together in as cheap a fashion as possible for me to make do what I do. But the still was just one place where I felt like I really had to spend the money, because the Christian Carl is just so amazingly well designed, and there was no second choice, really. I mean, there are some. I don't mean to dismiss the other stills that are out there as not being good quality stills, but I just felt like the Christian Carl was the top of the line, and I just wanted to spend my money there.
Absolutely. Did you have any? I was just wondering. Did you have any like buddies around town, like any of the other distillers that you kind of bounced ideas off of? Was there any? I'm hoping that there's definitely like a camaraderie with the New York distilling scene. You know,
there at this point there definitely is. When I bought my still, and when I was sort of knocking around my business idea, there were no other distilleries in town, quite literally, and it was there's a great community nationwide, and there's a bulletin board that we all belong to and exchange ideas, and it was a wealth of information, but I basically ended up building my facility largely without other input. There, you know, I definitely met some of the other distillers along the way, but they were sort of in the same place I was, and weren't much help in terms of helping me guide the facility.
Everyone was kind of like learning at
exactly.
the same time and same
but,
pace.
But now that we're all sort of up and running and we've started to meet each other, it's a great community. It's a really wonderful place to and it's a wonderful group of people to work with.
Cool. Let me ask you this too. Okay, we've talked a little bit about the rum. Obviously, I tasted it. We were talking about Fort Defiance earlier. I got to taste it at Fort Defiance last week or the week before. It's great. It's a great light rum. You know, it's very mixable. Like you said before, you mentioned a daiquiri. It's great for that. I'd kind of like to kind of talk a little bit more about these other projects you got going on. If you go to the
sure.
website, which is vanbruntstillhouse.com, you'll see that there are four categories there. You've got the rum, which is called Due North. It's an 80-proof white rum. Then you've got three other categories of whiskey, grappa, and moonshine. And kind of like, let's start out with the whiskey, because you sent me an email a few weeks ago, and unfortunately I wasn't able to swing by when you were distilling the whiskey, but tell us about what kind of focus you're having, or what your focus is as far as whiskey goes.
Well, I'm in this really fun place in terms of the whiskey production right now, because it's a huge difference between producing 5 gallons of whiskey on your stovetop and in your basement compared to doing it in a commercial environment. That the recipes that I had sort of put together before my Carl still showed up in the door are very different. And so I basically have spent the last couple months trying to just find the right recipes. And so I'm doing three different whiskeys at the moment. I don't know that I'll certainly have a limited release of all three of these whiskeys. It's not like I'm making these to drink myself. But I think going forward, I don't know that I'll offer all three whiskeys for sale in the long term. But I'm making what I'm calling an American whiskey, which is I think my favorite of just personal taste favorite for myself. It's a blend of grains. It has barley and wheat and rye and corn all together, and basically I wanted to go with that blend of things because I'm a big fan of Belgian beer, and the Belgian beer makers are sort of well known for their they don't pay attention to the rules of brewing. They sort of do whatever works best to make the best beer, and they're always using other grains in their beers, and so I wanted to find the right combination that gave complexity and the soft. I'm also a big fan of wheated bourbons, Pappy Van Winkle
sure.
type of bourbons, and so I wanted to have that softness that those bourbons have, but with some of the complexities of some of the other grains that are out there. So that's one of them. I'm also doing a rye, and having a lot of fun playing around with whether it's I've made a rye that's 50% rye, and I've made a rye that's 100% rye, and different types of rye, and the jury's sort of still out on which of those ryes will win out in the end. Partly because rye, I think, is one of those spirits that really needs some age to really
sure.
Have the flavors come out. And then the third thing I'm doing is I've been collaborating with Six Point Brewery to make a Scotch-style single malt.
Oh, cool.
And that's also been very fun.
Well, they're right down the street from you, so
yeah,
that's...
Yeah, right around the corner, yeah.
You could just take a wheelbarrow and...
pretty much.
wheel it down the street. So, that being said, like I was looking at your website last week as well, and I noticed that when you said American-style whiskey... I saw that there were barrels for Buffalo Trace on your website.
Yep.
So you're using used barrels, so obviously you can't call it, you know, like a bourbon, even if it were predominantly corn.
Right.
Because it would have to be first-time use. So that being said, like, and also you mentioned Van Winkle, which comes from Buffalo Trace. That's my favorite distillery, I mean, I just have
right.
to say, as far as, like, the big guys go. Have you done any... or do you have any plans to do any kind of experimental finishing, or is that too far down the line?
Unfortunately, finishing, in my humble opinion, is a little bit of a challenge for a small distiller. Sure. And I would love to get to that point. But I think it takes years to have enough mature product to get there. At this point, I'm choosing the aging process that I think is going to do the best for me in the shortest period of time possible, and that ends up being a blend of using some of the bourbon barrels, using some new oak, and then trying to find the right path to take to be both make good whiskey and be economically viable. But I definitely play with some other finishes. But at this point, it's a little too early for me to sure. commit to that too far.
Sure, I like to jump ahead.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue speaking with Derek Stillman, sorry, from Van Brunt Stillhouse. Back in a moment. All you superficial rappers will cease to exist if I come into a party hitting raps like this. All you superficial rappers will cease to exist if I come into a party hitting raps like this. All you superficial rappers will cease to exist if I come into a party hitting raps like this. All you superficial rappers will cease to exist.
The following program was sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Summertime is not the only time when barbecue is welcome. At S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, Sam Edwards has been working his magic on ribs, briskets, pit-cooked pulled pork, and much, much more. Add a few of their sides and the party is complete. Entertaining has never been so easy. To order, go to virginiatraditions.com.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. On the show today, on the phone today, we have Derek Schlesselman from Van Brunt Stillhouse in Red Hook, Brooklyn. Welcome back to the show, Derek.
Thank you.
So we were talking about the Due North rum, and we were talking about the whiskey production that you're very excited about, especially the rye. To me, especially when you taste rye whiskey, like taste so many of them side by side, they vary so much. I mean, and you can tell that, I mean, obviously it is from the grain, but like you said before, it is the aging that changes rye whiskey. It feels like more so than a bourbon even. So there's a lot that you can do to play around with it, but I'm just ready for you to get that in a bottle so I can try it out. So we talked a little bit before about the origin of your distilling career here, being grappa and playing around with the different musts from the different wineries around the state, which there are so many to choose from that it's a really cool thing to do. And I've always wanted to do that personally, but I just don't have the time between work and radio and playing in a rock and roll band. Mm-hmm. I wish I could, but I love grappa, and I would definitely love to try my hand at that one day. But going on to moonshine, which is another category on your website, what was the inspiration? There are a lot of white whiskeys out there right now, and
I haven't released my moonshine yet because there are a lot of white whiskeys out there, and some of them are really palatable, and some of them are less palatable. I got excited about moonshine in part because Red Hook, I mean, all of New York City, but Red Hook in particular has such a great history of moonshine. And people mostly associate moonshine with Prohibition, but moonshine really refers to anybody who's doing distilling illicitly. I mean, since right. the beginning of the country, there have been tax laws that required you to pay tax on your booze you're creating. Sure.
And there was the Whiskey Rebellion. And
exactly. And in the 19th century, a little known fact is that New York City produced more moonshine than the entire South combined. There were stills everywhere. There were stills in Chelsea. There were stills in Vinegar Hill. There were stills in Red Hook, all over town.
Well, you know, in Red Hook, to me, I used to live in Red Hook and work down there at a little whiskey shop, and it's no longer there anymore. But it definitely, Red Hook has that spirit, pun intended, to where it's like kind of like the it's kind of like the outlaw part of Brooklyn, but still having like that artisanal craft kind of thing, where you could, like, if you wanted to, get away with making moonshine down there to this day.
Right.
There's not, you know, I guess about like 4 or 5 years ago, there was a lot of spotlight as far as like real estate goes, and people opening up restaurants and bars and little shops and things like that. It never really picked up the way that they predicted, you know. And the reason why, you know, there are many reasons why. I mean, there's not a lot of public transportation. If you live down there, you're kind of down there, you know. I mean, unless you have a bike or a car, most people down there don't really do that. So it's its own little world, and it's perfect for, you know, things like breweries and distilleries. Even Stumptown Coffee's got their roastery down there.
Right.
So if you're down there, like, doing something that you can, like, outside of like a retail or like restaurant kind of business, if you're down there creating something that you can actually export out, then it makes a lot of sense to be down there.
Yeah.
And there are several places, you know, like, I mean, it's exciting to me. I unfortunately, it all started to happen after I moved away from Red Hook, but I still ride my bike down there and just see like all the cool things that are happening now, like, you know, like your distillery. There's another distillery doing this liqueur, Sorrel. Then there's another one doing like cacao liqueurs. Yep. And chocolates.
Yep.
And I'm sure you guys all know each other and powwow from time to time. It's just it's a really cool scene down there, and I think like, there really isn't another like neighborhood. I mean, I guess you could say Bushwick, probably you could do that. And but really, Red Hook has that spirit, you know.
Right.
So it's a very smart place to put a distillery. And you know, if your still blows up, the water's right there. So. But yeah, so did you originally plan on doing Red Hook, or were you?
You know, I've lived in Red Hook for 8 or 9 years at this point, and I didn't look anywhere else. It just seemed like a natural fit for me. I'm a huge fan of Red Hook, and I love all those things that you talked about. And I'm sort of, I mean, I wish that Red Hook had, part of me wishes that Red Hook had exploded the way that you described it. But part of me is very happy it didn't. And I think that you know, both sides of that coin are great, and both sides of that coin are not so great. But I'm a huge fan, and I love the idea that I wake up in the morning and I walk down the street 3 blocks and to my distillery and have some fun.
Excellent. Now, do you guys ever do, speaking of having fun, we just had the Manhattan Cocktail Classic a couple weeks ago. Were you involved in any of the events? Or
no, you know, my whiskey is just so young, I just was, I sort of felt like next year is my year to sort of get more involved with that.
Maybe it was, yeah, I mean, it seems like it might have been maybe too soon, obviously. Like,
yeah.
Whiskey takes time. That's what, you know, it's... All good things are worth waiting for.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Are you planning on doing anything for, say, like Tales of the Cocktail coming up this summer?
You know, I've just been so wrapped up in getting the distillery underway and establishing my business locally that I've not been branching out, but I definitely would like to, if not this year, next year.
Well, I have another question for you. How do you balance owning and distilling at your distillery, and then being an editor for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart?
And then on top of that, I have two young children. It's there is no balance. I'm working all the time. And I look forward to the day that I can find that balance again. But it's all worthwhile. You know, my job here at The Daily Show is is a fun and worthwhile job, and doing the distilling is fulfilling a dream of mine, and I'm really excited about that. And I think it's just a matter of time to be able to find the balance there.
You know, I kind of feel like we wouldn't be here in New York if we weren't complete, almost masochist, yeah, like workaholics.
I don't know anybody who's not. I mean, I complain about how much I'm working, but frankly, everybody I know is too. So
yeah, exactly. Oh, I never get to see my friends. Well, they don't get to see me either. So we'll just email each other. As far as any future plans go for the distillery, outside of these really interesting ideas for your different agings for rye and your different mash bills, anything else that we can look forward to coming out from Van Brunt Stillhouse?
Yeah, you know, I love to play around. I love to experiment, and one day I hope to be in that place. You know, before I was in distilling, I liked to make fruit wines and beer, and I look forward to getting back to that place. And at the moment, though, I'm just trying to keep my eye on the prize and focus on making good rum and getting my whiskey ready to roll.
Cool. Well, the website is vanbruntstillhouse.com. And do you ever offer distillery tours?
I have not yet, but I certainly plan to in the near future. I don't. Most of the distilleries in the city have a farm license, which allows them to sell from their distillery. And since I'm doing rum, that license didn't really apply. So I'm not allowed to sell any of my wares out of this distillery. And so consequently, the tours haven't made sense quite yet, but I think this summer I'll probably have a couple of random weekends that I post on my Facebook account or my Twitter account and have open tours, and then hopefully in the spring I'll have a tasting room open and we'll have tours on a regular basis.
Cool. And what would your Twitter account be?
It's VB Stillhouse.
VB Stillhouse is in Van Brunt Stillhouse. Cool.
Yeah, and my Facebook is Stillhouse.
Just Stillhouse?
Just Stillhouse, yeah.
Wow, I can't believe you got that one. Lucky. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Everyone, check out Van Brunt Stillhouse. You can go to the website, vanbruntstillhouse.com, and look out for Due North Rum. And Derek, thank you so much for talking to us, and I can't wait to come by the distillery.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you next time. Next week, we will have Michael Kimslick from Copper Sea Distillery. He's the CEO of that distillery in the Hudson Valley, and we'll talk to you next week. All right. Cheers. Now when you see him stumbling up and down the street, you know that cat's been drinking. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.